So, I was reading a comment from a listener earlier today. Shout out to myself. I suppose, it was me that wrote it. But it's just, we got a lot of stuff to go over today. And, the main monologue that we're going to talk about in the first section here, whatever you want to call it, I don't know if it's going to be an hour or not, but it's the how fascism, socialism, communism, any form of government, they're all wrong. since it's the Thanksgiving holiday here in the States, I'm going to cover that too. We're going to talk about a little unknown. It's not really unknown. They just don't teach it in history class anymore. And I think it's a good thing to get out there because it really shows what the true meaning of Thanksgiving is. And then after that, we are going to have an epic hour-long trip into, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's something I've never done, and it's been the most involved thing that I've done. I've slept, ate, worked on this story for like really a solid month or so, just this one single story. And I've finally got it to where it's presentable and it's going to be fun. It is fiction, of course, but it's based in reality. And the sad thing is, it's the current state of affairs that we live our lives in. That's Byte Rebels one-way protocol. That's all coming up here, right here, on Liberty Tunes Live. On RLM Radio.
Turn it up, feel the sound, break the chains. Your voice, your choice, no doubt in vain. Liberty Tunes, where the free arts collide. Own your story, let your soul decide. Own your data, rock your freedom loud. Sing it high, stand up proud. Liberty Tunes, where the truth's alive. Freedom's anthem, where dreams survive.
So I mentioned already that I was reading a comment from a listener and that I made a comment. And, I got a shout out to myself because my comment was really, I thought, really good. But the other person's comments, what it was in a chat room and a communist and basically a socialist was all going at it back and forth, and basically it was just them arguing the same shit, and they don't realize they're arguing the exact same shit. And then you can even bring in the fascism into the argument, and they're essentially all fighting over the same thing. I mean, they operate on the sole supreme unadulterated arrogance that they offer a better way for the individual to live. They genuinely believe that they can run your life better than you can. Now just think about the ego required to believe that. To look at a human being, this complex, chaotic, beautiful mess of biology, dreams, contradictions, desires, and think, I can optimize that. I can put that in a spreadsheet. The listener made a great distinction, though. They said that the only real difference is the delivery method. The communist wants to force those ideas on you immediately. They used the boot. They used the gulag. They used the direct threat of state violence to say, you will comply because we own you. The socialists, they're a little more subtle. They want to coerce you through the communal majority. They don't use a boot. They use a guilt trip. They use the sheer weight of the mob. They use the homeowners association from a hell to nag you into submission. And the fascists, well, you know how the fascists are. They just force you with, you know, whatever boot that they can find, the biggest, hardest boot they can find. And, you know, all three of them will start out and say, it's for the greater good. We want everyone to pay their fair share. But the fatal flaw is identical, whether it's the Politburo or the Planning Committee. It is the fatal conceit that a bureaucrat in a windowless room in Washington, D.C. or somewhere else, someone who has never run a business, never fixed a truck, never turned a wrench, never stuck a shovel in the ground, never had to hunt for their own dinner, knows how to spend your dollar better than you do, knows a diet better for you, knows your health and your personal health better than you. But here's the problem. They view society as a chessboard, and they view you as a pawn. And the problem with playing chess with human beings, the pawns have their own plans. The pawns have families. The pawns have distinct motivations that no central planner can ever predict. And when you try to force the pawns to move against their nature, you don't get a checkmate. You get a collapse. History isn't just a suggestion, folks. It's a crime scene. We're going to look at that evidence, because every time this arrogance takes the wheel, the car ends up in the ditch. Let's talk about sparrows. You want to see the ultimate example of what we know better than you? You have to go back to 1958, Mao's China, the great leap forward. Unquote, unquote. Spoiler alert, it wasn't a leap. It was a face plant. The central planners, the experts, the scientists, the guys with the clipboards who loved the smell of their own ink, they looked at the agriculture numbers and they identified a villain, the Eurasian tree sparrow. See, the government did the math, linear, bureaucratic math. They calculated that a single sparrow eats about 4.5 pounds of grain a year. So naturally, if you kill 1 million sparrows, you save 4.5 million pounds of food for the people. It's simple. It's logic. It's moronic. So Mao drafted the Four Pests campaign. And here is where that communal majority comes in that we talked about. They mobilized the entire country. I'm not exaggerating. They didn't just shoot the birds. They told citizens to go outside with pots, pans, drums, and gongs. The goal was to make up so much noise that the sparrows would be too terrified to land. Imagine that, an entire nation banging on cookware, forcing these birds to fly until they literally dropped out of the sky dead from exhaustion. They smashed eggs. They destroyed nests. It was a war against nature, and the state won. They nearly wiped out the sparrow population. The party officials patted themselves on the back. They gave each other medals. We fixed the inefficiency of nature. But they forgot one little variable, the kind of variable the individual farmer knows, but the bureaucrat in the capital ignores. Sparrows don't just eat grain. they eat locusts. With no sparrows to act as the Air Force, the locust population exploded. It was biblical. The swarms covered the sky. They didn't just eat the grain. They ate everything. The harvest didn't just dip. It vanished. The result wasn't more food. The result was the Great Chinese Famine. Estimates say anywhere from 15 to 45 million people died, starved to death, because the government thought they could edit the ecosystem like a rough draft of a bad speech. And you want to hear the punchline? The irony that hurts to laugh at? By 1960, the Chinese government realized their mistake. They had to go to the Soviet Union and import sparrows. They had to beg to get the birds back. This is what happens when you trade individual knowledge for collective arrogance. They tried to engineer reality, and reality hit back with a body count. And yet, people today still think, well, we would do it better this time. Don't bet on it. It's not going to happen. Here's some more historical evidence for you. This is the Thanksgiving part. Now, I can hear you guys already, the skeptics, but bonehead, that was Mao. That was China. That was a dictatorship. That can't happen here. It already did. In fact, it's the reason you're about to stuff your face with turkey and watch football next Thursday. We need to talk about the real origin of Thanksgiving. Not the construction paper hand turkey version you learned in second grade. Not the sanitized everyone held hands and shared equally myth. I'm talking about the Plymouth Colony, 1620. When the pilgrims first landed, they didn't just bring buckles and Bibles. They brought a corporate contract from their sponsors back in London. That contract mandated a system that would make a modern socialist blush. It was called the Common Course and Condition. Here were the rules. No private property, no personal ownership of land. Everything you grew, everything you hunted, and everything you built went into a common storehouse, and then the net rations were distributed equally. It didn't matter if you worked 14 hours a day or four. It didn't matter if you were the best farmer or the laziest slacker. You got the same share. Sounds fair, right? Sounds like that communal majority utopia my listener was talking about. Well, guess what happened? They nearly starved to death. It was a disaster. Governor William Bradford, the guy running the show, kept a diary, and he didn't mince words. He wrote that the young, able-bodied men suddenly didn't feel like working. They resented spending their sweat and time laboring to feed other men's wives and children without any compensation. They felt used. They felt like slaves to the community. So they stopped working. They feigned illness. The crops rotted. The common storehouse was empty. The colony was on the brink of extinction because they tried to outsource individual responsibility to the collective. So in 1623, with starvation staring at them in the face, Governor Bradford did something radical. He scrapped the socialist experiment. He abolished the Common Course. He assigned every family their own plot of land. He told them, whatever you grow on this land is yours. You eat it. You trade it. You sell it. It belongs to you. The effect was electric. Bradford wrote that suddenly, the women now willingly went into the field and took their little ones with them to get corn. People who had claimed that they were too sick to work under the collective system were suddenly the hardest workers in the colony. Productivity didn't just increase, it exploded. They had a bumper harvest. They had so much food that they finally had something to be truly thankful for. That's the real lesson of Thanksgiving. It wasn't a celebration of a socialist commune working. It was a celebration that the socialist commune ended. They survived because they embraced the only system that aligns with human nature, private property and individual incentive. We feast next Thursday, not because they shared everything, but because they were finally allowed to keep what they created. It's more than just Native Americans and settlers coming together. It was also a celebration of human ingenuity, private ownership, self-reliance, and the responsibility of the individual, not the collective. That makes humanity thrive. That's the real reason you were never taught this in history books. It's also the reason they focused the story so much on the Native Americans and not the exact situation the Plymouth settlers were in. They don't want you to remember the real history. Now think about that when you pass the cranberry sauce.
I wake up to a world in chains, no savior in sight, just the corporate gangs. Mask on, eyes glowing red, I bite rebel voice for the voiceless, the unsaid. The streets are cold, the eyes are blind to the truth, the power, the corrupt design. You scream for help, but no one hears, just the echo of your own fears. No one's coming, no salvation, just the government's cruel machination. Police and military, they guard not you, but the system, the elite, the chosen few. They promise security, peace and order, but all you get's a tighter border. Soldiers march not for your protection, but to keep the chains on your reflection. In the dark under neon lights, I see the fight, but no one fights right. The mask I wear, a symbol of war, against the state, against the core. No one's coming, no salvation, just the government's cruel machination. Police and military, they guard not you, but the system, the elite, the chosen few. Stand up, in this cyberpunk night. Rise up, bright rebels here to ignite the fight. No hero will come, no divine intervention. Just us, the people. In this dark dimension, look around, the truth's in plain sight. The government's here to maintain their might. You're just a number, a cog in the wheel. Their control's the only deal they seal. So wear your mask, join the rebellion against the tech, the corporate hellion. In this dystopia, we're on our own. No one's coming, we're alone. We're alone. No one's coming, no salvation, just the government's cruel machination. Police and military, they guard not you, but the system, the elite, the chosen few. No one's coming, no salvation, just the government's cruel machination. Police and military, they guard not you, but the system, the elite, the chosen few.
Oops, I just realized that I forgot to download this video of a news report to play on this part. But no worries, I'll fix it in post-production or, you know, whoop-de-doo. Just put the link in there. But it's a news report about back in Venezuela about 8-9 years ago when they started to go south with their great stuff because they were really a great superpower, and the people got so hungry because they couldn't afford to eat that they broke into zoos and started eating the animals. But anyways, I digress. Before the break, you know, I talked about the arrogance of the leaders, the ones who think they can calculate a harvest or design a society from top down. But now I want a pivot. I want to talk about the weapon they use to keep you in line when they run out of bullets. or before they even buy them. My listener, back to that comment earlier, he made a sharp observation. He noted that while communism uses the government boot, socialism often relies on being coerced through a communal majority. Now pause and think about that phrase, coerced through a communal majority. It sounds so nice, doesn't it? Communal. Sounds like a potluck dinner. Sounds like borrowing a cup of sugar from your neighbor. But in practice, is it the soft tyranny of the mob? Yes, it is. See, the brilliance of this system is that the state doesn't always have to be the bad guy. They outsource the enforcement to you, to your neighbors, to your coworkers. They create a culture where conforming is moral and dissenting is dangerous. They're doing that right now. Even remember what was back, I think it was Obama's, late Obama's second term. If you see something, say something. And then that carried into Trump's first term and obviously Biden's. You know, it's always, if you see something, say something. Like the red flag laws for guns. I just got to remind everybody, you know, everybody talks about the story of Anne Frank. The people who turned in Anne Frank, the dude, yeah, he was following the law. He was the actual the one that was legally in the correct. Just because something's legal does not mean it's right. The people that were hiding Anne Frank and her family, they were breaking the law. And everybody celebrates. It's like everybody goes to the movies. Like, I don't know, pick your favorite Marvel superhero. Or, you know, Batman. You know, everybody's for the rebel in the movies. They stand up, they cheer. You know, fight the big man. But then in reality, when the government comes up and says, say something, see something, say something, let us know, everybody bends a knee. They tell you that true freedom is selfish. They tell you that relying on yourself is suspicious. They want you to believe that the social contract, a contract, by the way, that none of us ever signed, requires you to subject or submit to groupthink. If you succeed too much, you're greedy. If you want to keep what you earn, you're antisocial. If you want to educate your own kids, you're undermining your public trust. It's a psychological prison. The walls aren't made of concrete. They're made of shame. They're made of the fear of being the outsider. They sell you this idea of a safety net. Let the community take care of you, they say. Let the majority decide. I still say the majority and the democracy is gang rape. But let me tell you something about nets. If a net is tight enough to catch you in when you fall, it's tight enough to strangle you when you try to stand up. That safety net is a spider web. Once you're in it, you owe the spider. The listener ended his comment with the only truth that really matters, really. The only real freedom is that of the individual. And he's right. Freedom isn't about voting for the guy who promises to give you the most free shit. Freedom is the ability to look at the communal majority, look at the mob, look at the collective, and say the most powerful word in the English language. No. No, I won't participate. No, I won't conform. No, I won't pretend your lie is the truth just to fit in. But be warned, when you say no to the collective, things get ugly. And if you think the communal majority is just about peer pressure, you haven't looked at East Germany. Let's take a look at what happens when the community becomes the informant. Always watch out for countries that have to put the word democratic in their name. It's like a used car salesman telling you a car is reliable. They have to say it. It probably isn't. So let's take a trip to East Germany, the GDR, the German Democratic Republic. We're talking about the Stasi, the Ministry for State Security. Now, most people think of the Stasi as the secret police. Men in trench coats, bugging phones, opening mail. Sure, they did that. But that wasn't their true power. Their true power was what they weaponized, the community. See, the Stasi didn't have enough officers to watch everyone. No government does. So they recruited the, I'm going to butcher these words, Inoffizial Mitarbeiter, the informal collaborators. These weren't uniformed officers. These were your neighbors, your co-workers, your teachers, even your family members. History tells us by the time the wall came down in 1989, the Stasi had about 90,000 official officers, but they had over 170,000 informants. Think about that ratio, including part-time snitches. It's estimated that there was one informer for every 6.5 citizens. If you sat down for dinner with 6 friends, statistically, one of them was writing a report on you. This was the ultimate perversion of the communal majority. They convinced people that loyalty to the state was more important than loyalty to their own blood. There are files, miles of files, that people found after the wall fell. Women found out their husbands had been reporting on them for years. Kids found out their parents were informants. Best friends realized their confidential late-night chats about politics were transcribed in a government basement the next morning. Why did they do it? Coercion. The state said, if you want that promotion, if you want your kid to get into university, if you want a new apartment, you help the collective. You help the majority root out the dissents. They destroyed the most fundamental unit of freedom, trust. They created a society where nobody spoke the truth because the community was listening. And if the community is listening, the individual goes silent. That is the end game of community coercion. It's not a neighborhood watch. It's a prison where the inmates guard each other. And the moment you stop trusting your neighbor is the moment the state has won. But hey, at least they had free healthcare, right? Got one more stop on this tour of good intentions. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And this one isn't in the history books yet, because it's happening right now.
Short circuit the world, break the monotony. with our screams and our riffs. We'll light up the flame, we'll dismantle the system with our metal and rage. In the circuit breaker revolution, we'll engage. Feel the power, the energy, ready to break. Against their conformity, we'll take and we'll shake. No more silent obedience in darkness. We'll roar, we'll break their control. Change this fucking stage. We are the resistance, the end of the game. In this world of conformity, we'll reclaim our name. Circuit breaker, break the chains, let's fucking rage. Circuit breaker, time to change this fucking stage. We are the resistance, the end of the game. In this world of conformity, we'll reclaim our.
Let's bring this home. Let's bring us to the 21st century. Because I know some of what you're thinking. Bonehead, you're talking about Pilgrims, Cold War relics. We're modern. We have iPhones. We're smarter now. Tell that to Venezuela. Not long ago, I'm talking historically yesterday, Venezuela wasn't just a country. It was a jewel of South America. It sat on the largest proven oil reserves on the planet. They were wealthy. They were modern. They didn't start with gulags. They didn't start with a coup. They started with a vote. They voted for socialism of the 21st century. That was the brand name. It was a shiny. It promised that the communal majority would finally get their fair share. They cheered when the government seized the oil companies. Take that, corporate greed. They cheered when they seized the farms, land for the people. They cheered when they set price controls on food. Finally, fair prices for everyone. And then the math showed up. You see, when you seize a business, you don't seize the knowledge of how to run it. When you demonize profit, you destroy the incentive to produce. The result? The Maduro diet. That's a real term. In 2016, a university study found that 75% of the population of Venezuela had lost an average of 19 pounds. Not because they were hitting the gym, but because there was nothing to eat. We're talking about a country that used to export food, now digging through trash bins. Remember those zoo animals I mentioned a while ago? There are confirmed reports from the state of Zulia, from Caracas, however you pronounce it, of people breaking into zoos, not to steal the cash register, but to steal the animals, to eat them. Imagine the desperation required to look at a zoo exhibit and see a grocery aisle. Now, I know what you're thinking. You just know, Bonehead, you only know what you saw online. No, I've got friends that live in Venezuela. If you've listened to me a while, You know, I did a show called Loud and Proud. One of the members of our hosts on that show was this new girl. Everybody called her Andy because her name was Angelise. And she lived in Venezuela while this was all going on. I don't know if she's still in Venezuela. I hope the hell not. But she couldn't leave because of her mom. She lived through this. She told us about this stuff as it was happening. Another frequent person that was on the show was Nahu Puku. He lived in Venezuela at the same time. Different part from where Andy was at. But the same shit was going on in his city. They couldn't eat. Nahu Puku was a big dude when he first came on the show. He wasn't a big dude the last time we had a show with him. It's... this is the grim reality of, quote-unquote, the better way. They traded their economic freedom for a promise of security, and they end up eating zoo animals in the dark. Just remember, if you ever vote your way into socialism, you're going to have to shoot your way out of it. If you vote your way into communism, you're going to have to shoot your way out of it. If you vote your way into fascism, you're going to have to shoot your way out of it. That's just the reality of the world that we live in. Because it's, I get so tired of the left versus right bullshit. My side, my ruler's better than your ruler. And it's, you got to understand, it's not left versus right. It's not red versus blue. It's the state versus you.
They paint the lines, they draw the signs. Red and blue, they feed the lies. Puppets dance on corporate strings while the state pulls the hidden spring. Divide the masses, keep them blind. Left or right, they cage your mind. But I see through the smoke and haze. This ain't a game, it's a rebel's play. Forget the red, forget the blue. State's got a boot crushing on you. Take your freedom, spit on your trail. It's the state versus you. Big tech spies with a digital grin. Track your moves, they know where you've been. Government boots on the necks of the free. Surveillance state, no. They sell your data, they steal your voice. Call it progress, but it's all by choice. Rise up now, let the fire ignite. We're the rebels who burn through the night. Forget the red, forget the blue. State's got a boot crushing on you. Take your freedom, spit on your trail. Now the state versus you. They wave their flags, they scream their creeds. Only serves their needs. The talking heads, they fuel the fight. While the state grows stronger in the dead of night. They tax your dreams, they crush your will. Force you to swallow their bitter pill. But we won't bow, we won't comply. This is the spark that'll light up the sky. Just to keep you alive. Break the chains, tear the
No more fear from city streets to the rural plains. We'll shatter the state and inspire change. United we stand, no colors divide. The rebel's heart beats with a warrior's pride. This is our call, let the truth break through. The fight's not red or blue, it's us against you. Forget the red.
So what have we learned today? We've looked at the pilgrims starving in their common storehouse. We looked at Mao fighting a war against sparrows and losing. We've looked at the Stasi turning neighbors into snitches and Venezuela turning zoos into butcher shops. The scenery changes, the uniforms change, the slogans change, but the math never changes. You cannot calculate the human spirit. You cannot centralize the human drive to survive. My listener, who started this whole rant for today, said it best. The only real freedom is that of the individual. That isn't just a bumper sticker. It's the only survival strategy that has ever worked. So stop looking for a savior in the government. Stop looking for meaning in the collective. The collective doesn't care if you eat. The collective doesn't care if you dream. The only person coming to save you is you. And frankly, that's the only person qualified for the job. I'm Uncle Bonehead. Keep your head on a swivel. Keep your hands on the wheel. And for the love of God, don't eat the sparrows. We'll see you next time. They're too small. No, I don't care. The sparrows are too small. What is that? It's like an appetizer. You want to eat a turkey. I mean, forget the turkey. Eat an ostrich. My God, how many people can you feed on an ostrich leg? Good Lord. Or an emu. I wonder what emu tastes like. I wonder if you could barbecue it. That would be awesome. But anyways, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and, dude, I don't know what to call this. I don't know if I should call this an audiobook, a rock opera. I have no clue what to call it. It's the playthrough of the album by Rebel's newest album, One Way Protocol, but it tells a complete story. I haven't done this at all. I mean, I've done a couple of things where all the songs are all kind of fit along the same concept. But this actually tells a story. And I have a story narration to go between the songs. So there's just 56 minutes of music for it. And no, 51 minutes of music. And I don't know how long it's going to take me to read the narrations, but we're going to take a break and we're going to come right back and jump in to Byte Rebel's One Way Protocol. I hope you enjoy it because I worked my ass off on it.